Attention.
Well, it's great to see everybody here today. Thank you very much for coming. This is a wonderful day. Special thanks to Sensei. I want to remember first, with reverence, all of those who've come before and who've prepared and sustained the way and the practice. I want to thank, of course, our Sensei, Carl Bachman, and Sensei Bachman's teachers. I want to thank family and friends and acknowledge thanks to my wife for her support, for her being here today and for her support throughout my practice, without which it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to sustain this practice. I want to thank all my friends, practice, both with me, meet me here, whether it's the cold days in December or the warm days in May. Just acknowledge the long time that, of course, with my friend George, who will soon be leaving us once again to go to France, this time for a much extended visit. We have wonderful mornings sitting, and then our morning coffee and our times together with all the morning people. So I want to recognize all the family and friends that know us and put up with us, and also keep us in our place. And then finally, let us take refuge in the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, so that we can pass them on to those who will come after us, and so on, and so on. This is a source of great love for me, this particular book, Not Always So, by Sunryu Suzuki. Many people know the teaching Beginner's Mind by Sunryu Suzuki, but this is might be a lesser-known book for most people. But interestingly, I picked this book up, and there in the first page is an inscription, Jeff, happy holidays. Thank you for all your support in maintaining this wonderful practice, Carl. And the inscription is dated December 23rd, 2007. So it's been a while. It's been a while that we've been working together. And it's been a while with this particular Sangha. In remembering those who came before us, I do want to make mention of certain people. First, the Sangha had its beginnings, at least for me. I became involved with the Sangha in probably the early 90s, mid-90s. And at that point, the Sangha was sitting at the Montclair Co-op School down by the corner of Forest Street and Walnut. No, I'm sorry, Forest and Chestnut. And we met in the basement of that school, and there were four people who were the leaders in that group. Sensei was one of the four. Three others were Ray Cicchetti, who went on to become a Dharma holder through Roshi Kennedy, who now, of course, is the sensei for the Empty Bowl Sangha in Morristown. And then there's Deb Barracks, who went on to become also a Dharma holder through Joan Holbrook with the Heart Circle Sangha in Ridgewood. And then, last but not least, a dear friend, John Flynn, who passed away all too soon, and who was also a founding member of this Sangha, and also actually brought me into Zen practice and introduced me to the Sangha. And, in addition to being a founding member of the Sangha who brought me into it, John also was my philosophy teacher in college, which was an amazing thing when I came to Montclair and saw John again. And, John! It's like he was my existential philosophy teacher, the first philosophy course I took at Livingston College at Rutgers. The other thing, talking about labels, we did go back and forth, Carl and I did go back and forth with regard to what should we call this position. And I felt very comfortable with the title, head monk, because I am a person who probably, given a choice, I would choose classic Coke as opposed to, I like the classics more so than I like the tradition and the richness of it. So even though, as my son Andrew, who's not here, will point out to me that you're not a monk, Dad. You don't do the practice. You know, you don't live your life in a monk-like way enough to call yourself a monk, even though he will, you know, point that out to me over and over again. I think the term head monk is a good one for the sangha. I certainly don't envision myself as a monk, and I recognize my deficiencies in that regard. But I think that it's a good term, and it's a term that has a deep meaning, and something that if you try to wear it, it may not quite fit, but it's not a bad garment to put on. And also to my son Peter, who's also known as Jagadisha, his fiance gave me a card that says Monk Dad. So the term is going to carry, obviously. So a couple of little other things about the Sangha here. The Sangha was at Montclair Co-op School for many, many years, and then we were told we had to leave there because they were expanding and they needed the space that we were in. So we wandered in the desert for a few years, and we found a good home. The desert was kind to us, but we found a good home at Make Ready Press Gallery on Glen Ridge Avenue. And we stayed there, but it had always been, you know, my feeling that a Sangha should have a home, should have some place that it can call its own. And I always felt that there was something not quite right about having to set up every Sunday and then break down every Sunday. And put, even though they were nice and they gave us a nice place to put our cushions and all our little things, still I felt in all that it would be good to have a home. And so even though we weren't being forced out of the Make Ready Press Gallery, nonetheless we began looking for a home and found this location, which had been a barbershop before we took it over. So some nice things have grown out of this, because by being here, we've not only established a home for ourselves, and many, many people who come here will say, you know, when they walk in here, that it feels like a peaceful place, that it contains the energy of what we have here. And we also make it available not only to our group, but to another Zen group that sits on Wednesday nights. And then Leo has a group here that practice being in the here and now. We've had other groups here that have used it for meditation practice. We've shared it with a group of autistic children. The landlord of the building has a child who suffers with autism. And so she's run a program here over the summers for children with that. We've had other groups that do Qigong. We have a group coming up that's doing Qigong here. So it's a Zen center, a Zendo, that's more than a Zendo. It accommodates, like we try to accommodate here, lots of different flavors, lots of different groups, but within the same theme, within the theme of, you know, meditation practice. As Carol reminded us last week, I'm sort of looking inward, taking that backward step. And so that, for me, is the service aspect of the practice, is working as skillfully as I can to integrate and work with people who are experienced practitioners, who want a place to sit and to develop their practice, to work with sensei, to have Daisan to do one-to-one instruction, and to have an opportunity for beginners to come in and to have some exposure. People through the wonderful website that Jim set up, we'll get people, many, many inquiries from people who've said that they've spent many years reading about, you know, meditation, years reading about Zen practice, and would like an opportunity to experience it. When can I come in? When can I do that? You know, usually Jim or I will say, now! Do it now! Don't wait! The practice is about direct experience. It's not what you read about, although reading, you know, helps us focus our minds and helps us also, not only helps us mind, but in a book like Not Always So by Suzuki, The True Spirit of Zen, the spirit of the teacher can come off the pages and grab you and pull you in. When we read Charlotte Joko Beck, which is the book that Bill has us working with now in practice circle, you know, we have an opportunity to share the spirit and to share the direct experience, the mind-to-mind transmission with the teacher, even though the teacher may not be here or the teacher may be gone. So service is a beautiful thing. I was told at one point that my name, Jeff or Jeffrey, actually means way of peace. And I think that that's probably a pretty good name for me, because I like peace. I like harmony. Although I realize that, you know, harmony doesn't necessarily mean the absence of conflict. It's sort of like balancing opposing forces. The reality is that there is conflict, there is normal conflict in human relations and so forth. We all want something, usually there's not enough of it to go around. Or for whatever reason, there's usually conflict. So it's, how do we balance that conflict? How do we maintain things, the yin and yang of it, without it going too far one way or too far the other way? And that's the beauty of a sangha, because a sangha helps us, you know, maintain the balance and keeps us from going too far in one direction or the other. It's like a wonderful teacher helps us from going too far in one direction or the other, not too much in not too much in emptiness and not too much in form, but you know, somewhere where you can move back and forth easily between the two, so that at some point there's no two at all, and yet the two is always there. So I'm going to read a little bit right now. Right now I face east. The rising sun lights the spring forest. Young green leaves shine. Birds sing. The brook flows. Voices carry. Tires crush pebbles, then accelerate and disappear. Oh, what joy, taking pen to paper, and to feel each word pressed to life. Service in the name of Watt, and for the sake of Watt, and if not for Watt, then Watt. I serve, you serve, we serve, he and she and it serves. But it does not feel like service, does it? It feels like life. Doing this and doing that, and then something else, again and again, but always new, always different, and with some degree of humanity. Whether it is opening the door to the Zendo on a cold, dark morning, and then stepping through and feeling the warmth of the place, striking a match, lighting a candle, replacing the candle. Watching the smoke rise, swirling, dancing, twirling in the light as it leaves the incense, then disappears into the thin air, leaving only a trace of an aroma that, if I'm lucky, I will catch again by surprise later in the day, caught in the fold of my shirt, and then gone. Dogen, the child, watching that same smoke rising from incense at his mother's funeral service, and wondering in his suffering at impermanence, and where did that lead him? To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be penetrated by everything, to be part of everything. To accept and be accepted by everything with or without labels. Is that so, you say? Well, so did Hakuin, that old rascal monk, wrongfully accused by a beautiful Japanese girl of fathering her out-of-wedlock child. How easy it was to blame this virtuous monk. Pillar of virtue, in whom she trusted and who took unfair advantage of her. Her parents and the village, incensed by this unholy deed, blame not the girl, but turn their anger on Hakuin and turn the child over to him as well. Does he protest and proclaim his innocence? Does he file a lawsuit? Does he retain counsel? No, he simply says, is that so? And takes the child along with the blame and raises the infant for one whole year, adjusting his ways to change diapers, feed, and soothe the baby. There is no separation. Right here, right now, what is to be done? And then the girl, overcome with grief and anguish, tells her parents, Hakuin is not the father. The father is the young fisherman in the village. And so the parents go in shame to Hakim, seeking his forgiveness. But there is no blame in his heart, and his eyes are not hard. He hears them and returns the child to them, saying, "Is that so?" And then returns to his life. What did he receive? What did he give up? Is there anything to receive or to give up? And who receives and who gives up? Right now I face east. The rising sun lights the spring forest. Young green leaves shine, birds sing, the brook flows. Voices carry, tires crush pebbles, then accelerate and disappear. Thank you.